Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. We have four cases to be submitted today on oral argument. Planning to hear the first two and then take a brief recess and then finish the docket for the day. And we begin with Cortez versus Rubio. Mr. Hinojosa.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Today, I am going to be talking about a case that deals with requesting a passport by a U.S. citizen. The facts of the case are very similar to many other cases. And in the past, it had been determined that under 8 U.S.C. Section 1503A, the 5-year statutory period of limitations was a jurisdictional rule. This court determined recently in Saravia v. Noem that it was not jurisdictional. And my understanding is that that means then that we are subject to equitable tolling. At the time that the district court made that ruling, that decision in this case that it was jurisdictional, it did not have the benefit of this court's ruling in Saravia v. Noem. Now, we did have the benefit of Riley v. Bondi and Santo Zacarias, which were some of the cases that this court used to decide that 5-year statutory period of limitations was not jurisdictional. The court was made aware of this, and I guess in my mind it had an opportunity to have reviewed that, but they followed the precedent of this court. Now, that means that we never got to actually hear or consider the reasons for equitable tolling in the district court. And to me, this makes it a good candidate for this case to be remanded so that we can have an opportunity to show or present to the district court the reasons why equitable tolling should apply in this case.
Well, just in case we were to decide not to remand it, but to decide that ourselves, why don't you tell us what you think are the reasons for equitable tolling? Because we could decide that ourselves.
Yes, Your Honor, I will certainly do that. So the first time my client got a passport was in 2003. He had his passport for somewhere around 10 years, and then he lost it in 2013. He lost it and he was in Mexico, in Monterrey. And he lost it and he went to the U.S. Embassy in Monterrey and reported his passport stolen. And it's not 100% clear to me, but I believe that an application was submitted for a new passport. But during the interim, he finds his lost passport. So he decides to come back to the United States. He comes in through Houston and the Bush International Airport. There he stopped, they take away his passport. They actually denied that application at the end of the day. So my client immediately files for another passport application.
Why did they take his passport away?
Because he had reported it lost. Mm-hmm. And so they said, well, the passport had been reported lost, so then we're gonna take it away. Now, after that, in 2015, they denied his passport. And they denied his passport on what I would argue, a separate argument, that is not the statutory grounds required. But it seems to be by some precedent of this court and other courts back in the 1950s that a denial for any reason is a denial under the statutory grounds. Now, I disagree with that, fundamentally, because it's not the structure of the statute. But that's the second denial. And
well, counsel,
yes.
Perhaps I'm kind of an error, but I thought that when he tried to renew it, the State Department discovered his Mexican birth certificate, and that called into question the U.S. citizenship.
That happened in the 2015 decision. that was denied. And so that was I guess, in my understanding, that was the first time that happened, or that actually happened, that denied that. Now, after they denied that, arguably because there was a Mexican birth certificate, and there was a Mexican birth certificate.
But they denied it. Cortez a new passport until he gave more evidence that he was born in the United States. Although then he had, as I understand it, he had several chances to cross numerous passport applications, but he never did so.
So
is that accurate or not?
No. In the 2015 denial, he did give several different reasons. He sent more information, and they even had an oral, according to the record, they had an oral interview with him, and then they denied it in 2015. But they didn't deny it on the basis that he was not a national of the United States. They said, look, you haven't proven to us that you are one. Now, after that, he files another application for a passport. That application was filed in 2019. Now, in 2020, that application is denied on the basis that he did not, he was not current in his child support. And then, sometime in 2014, after he sends a whole bunch more evidence, they decide to deny his application on the grounds that he had not shown, by the preponderance of the evidence, that he that he had been born in the United States, I suppose.
And he has never shown any evidence of that, of his mother's presence in the United States when he was born, any kind of a church or government document or any other kind of documentation. Is that right?
He did show. We sent some evidence relating to those issues. One of it was an affidavit from his mother. We also were not able to get, even though the mom said that she was able to travel to the United States back in those days with a border crossing card, we have not been able to get those records. So those records were not available to us. Now, in that sense, the issue becomes, or the secondary issue becomes, or maybe even the most important issue becomes, you know, what does the statute require? Because the statute clearly says that the determination needs to be based on the basis that he is not a national of the United States. Now, when I read that statute, to me that means that the burden is not on the applicant for a passport application. However, that is not an argument to be made here at this point. I'm just stating it for the purposes of equitable tolling and why we need to have this case remanded or reconsidered, because the question is, should Mr. Cortez be allowed to show what should be the correct interpretation of the law?
So, and what do you do with the evidence, as I understand it, in the record that there was a conflicting birth certificate from Nuevo León, April 21st, 1977, a Mexican birth certificate?
So there was this Mexican birth certificate. Now, the Texas birth certificate was first in time. The Texas birth certificate was a contemporaneous document. The argument is that the Mexican birth certificate was not a contemporaneous document. That was created after. And in the affidavit the mom gave us, she explains why this was done. As a matter of fact, my client went and studied in Mexico for a long, long, long time.
So what's the innocent explanation for being born twice?
Well, he wasn't born twice. The mom goes over there and creates a Mexican birth record for him.
Why?
Because she wanted him to go to school over there.
So the idea is that it was immigration fraud in Mexico, but not in the United States?
Well, yes, it could be the case. It could be the case. I don't know if it was or not, but yes. Okay. Now, the question is, the other question is, in my mind, you know, what constitutes, to follow up on the equitable tolling argument. So then my client was actively pursuing his rights. Those decisions, in my mind, when I read them, when I looked over them, were not actually clear that they were final. It gave the impression that all my client had to do was give more information, or a little more information, and that's what he tried to do.
Well, what do you do with the claim processing rule, 1503A?
Yes.
I can't remember. The 5 years lapsed, and on its face, it appears that claim processing bar, which is there as a practical matter to resolve these, to keep trying to avoid taking on cases where the evidence is not fresh, et cetera. But that is a firm claims processing rule. What do you do with that, say to that?
Well, what I say to that is that he had 5 years, but the question is 5 years from what period first? That's one of the questions that I have, and I'm going to attempt to answer that. The other issue is that there was an intermediate decision in 2019 that said, because you have not paid child support, we're going to deny you. And that did not mention, it mentioned the regulatory grounds for denying it on the basis of no payment of child support, which is correct, the department can do that. But it did not mention, at that point, the non-nationality grounds. And then my client went back and tried to fix his child support issue, filed another application, and that other application, somewhere in 2020, 2021, that other application was never acted upon until 2024. And as a matter of fact, the government says, or the letter says, that they decided the case, denied the case in April of 2024. But we had to ask for proof of that, and they sent us a letter in August of 2024 saying, yes, we denied it back in April 2024, but my client never got actual notice of that. So we believe that intervening decision regarding the child support created grounds to believe that there was a qualitatively different decision. And then the final decision that happened, if there was a final decision, could have been the one in 2024, even though we think it wasn't. Which brings me to the other issue. What do you do with the fact that under 8 U.S.C. Section 1503, in order to bring a claim, you need to have a denial that is based on non-nationality. But if you don't have that denial, then you can't bring a claim under 8 U.S.C. Section 1503A. And that kind of explains, in my mind, how it is that the 1950 decisions got this whole thing confused. Because back in the 1950s, several courts decided the issue that any denial was good enough for statutory purposes, but that was because the government was taking too long in making those decisions. And some of these folks back then needed to get into the country. They were actually outside of the country. They were trying to get in, most of them. And then this ruling all of a sudden becomes applicable to all future passport applications. And I just think that was a misunderstanding of two things. First, a misunderstanding of what the statutory ground was. They were trying to create an equitable remedy, but that's not necessarily the court's position. And second, a misunderstanding as well of what the cases themselves hold. I believe that in 2024, if we are to use those cases, which I am not sure that they would be applicable, it would only make that decision the final decision for purposes of the 5-year period because the government took so long. Thank you.
You've saved time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks.
Ms. Vaughn?
May it please the court, Jennifer Bowen on behalf of the defendant appellee, the Secretary of State. For the reasons stated in the responsive brief, this court should dismiss this appeal. While this court did issue a decision, the district court in this case held it lacked jurisdiction. It cannot be disputed that following that decision, this court issued a precedential decision in Villegas-Sarabia holding...
Keep your voice up so that the younger fellows can hear.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Okay.
In Villegas-Sarabia, which was issued after the district court's decision in this case holding it lacked jurisdiction, this court held that the time bar in Section 1503 is a non-jurisdictional claims processing rule. That cannot be disputed.
Yes, and Mr. Hinojosa has accurately
Nonetheless, remand in this case would be futile because the claim is time barred.
Well, now, I don't mean to be nitpicky about words, but at the beginning you told us we should dismiss this appeal.
Yes, Your Honor.
I thought what you would be telling us is that we should affirm the district court's dismissal of the appeal.
I apologize, Your Honor, if I misspoke, but I understand that this court cannot affirm the district court's denial as a matter of lack of jurisdiction. Nonetheless, this court should affirm the dismissal of the claims.
Okay,
but it will not be under a lack.
You're going to have to explain that because we very, very commonly either affirm or reverse where a district court has dismissed for want of jurisdiction.
But, Your Honor, this court has held that that the claims bar in Section 1503 is a non-jurisdictional claims processing rule. That decision was issued after the court held that it lacked jurisdiction where this claim was filed more than 5 years after either the 2013 denial or the 2015 denial. The 2013 denial was an application for a renewal passport, whereas the 2015 denial was an application for a new passport. Whichever one, it's still more than 5 years later. This claim is still time barred under Section 1503, but the law in this circuit has changed such that it's no longer a jurisdictional issue. That is respondent's position based on this court's law.
So why would we dismiss? I mean, sometimes we dismiss because we lack jurisdiction. Sometimes we dismiss, I guess, because an appeal is frivolous. But what would be the reason that we would be dismissing here instead of affirming? I know that I've asked that question before, and
Your Honor,
giving a perfectly good answer, but I don't understand.
Your Honor, respondent's position is that this court should affirm the dismissal of the claims. But it would not be affirming the basis. It would not be affirming
under this
court's law.
All right. So you've changed what you told us in the beginning.
Oh, I didn't. I apologize, Your Honor.
You started out by saying we should dismiss this appeal.
Right. Deny the appeal. Yes, Your Honor. I apologize if I'm misspeaking. At the end of the day, these claims are time barred under Section 1503. It is no longer a question of jurisdiction. Nonetheless, it is still a claims processing rule that applies here, and such that remand to the district court would be futile, even though this court's precedent changed following the district court's decision.
If we were to remand, would the district court be empowered to exercise equitable tolling?
Your Honor, respondent does not concede that this court has never held that Section 1503, the time bar in Section 1503, is subject to equitable tolling. Respondent does not concede that equitable tolling would apply. Rather, respondent's position is that this court does not need to decide that issue. In this case, where Cortez has, in his opening brief, the only basis for equitable tolling that he asserts is that he's continued to apply for a passport. This court has held that the time bar in section 1503 is clearly intended to prevent duplicative applications for the same relief from reopening the courthouse doors upon denial. So it cannot be, as a matter of law, whether or not equitable tolling were to apply, that repeatedly applying for a passport would allow for equitable tolling of section 1503. So the Secretary's position is that this court need not decide the issue of equitable tolling here, whether it applies to 1503, because whether it applies or not, it would not apply here. As for the issue of the decision, Cortez has taken the position that a decision that finds that he failed to sufficiently show his nationality is not sufficient to start the time bar under section 1503. Here, it's clear that the statutory scheme places the burden on an applicant to show that he is a national of the United States entitled to a passport. Under that statutory scheme, it must necessarily mean that any finding that he has failed to meet that burden would be sufficient to start the time bar, the clock, the five-year clock under section 1503. Such that the first denial in 2013 or even the second denial in 2015 would have started that time clock, and this case filed would be subject, would be time barred under section 1503.
Which do you say it is, 2013 or 2015 or some other?
No, Your Honor, we would take the position that it's 2013, but even if you were to find that where that was an application for a replacement passport and that's somehow different than an application for a new passport, it's time barred under either 2013 or 2015. So in summary, where remand to the district court would be futile because these claims are time barred, even though the district court may have had jurisdiction, they were nonetheless subject to a time bar and therefore subject to dismissal as a claim upon which relief could not be granted. The claims were subject to dismissal. So this court should affirm the dismissal of the claims, even recognizing that there was jurisdiction.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bowman. Mr. Hinojosa, you've saved some time for rebuttal.
First, I want to address, of course, from our perspective, equitable tolling does apply, and there's enough in the record to show why equitable tolling applies. There was a qualitative difference decision made in the interim. The first decision was not under the statutory grounds, and it is our position that none of them were, because the statute required that the decision be made, and the way the statute is structured is an affirmative decision saying he's not a national of the United States. That statutory scheme places the burden not on the applicant, but on the government. And this would make sense because we're dealing with a situation of a United States citizen, arguably under the 14th Amendment, because we're not saying that we're saying that this is a birth-based citizenship, not one that was acquired through parents by birth. And so that's why I think Congress chose the words they chose. The Supreme Court decided a case called Ms. Chavez, in which it dealt with the word A, an article, one little word, A, where the lower courts had taken the position that you can send several documents to make one notice to appear. And the court said, no, this little Article A means something. And so that means that there's one notice only. And so we're not going to take two notices and make them one. So if it stands to reason that if one word like the Article A means something, a whole set of words on the grounds that the person is not a national of the United States means something as well. And to say that it means nothing or to decide that we're just going to place or erase that limitation means that we're changing the statute. Neither this court nor the district court nor any other court is authorized to change statutes. And that is our position on a more maybe philosophical level, but that's the structure of the Constitution. We have separation of powers for a reason. I did not write the statute. My client certainly did not write the statute. The statute was written by Congress. Now, we have a statute that we need to deal with. The courts, back in the 1950s, decided we're going to apply equity because it's unfair that these individuals can't come in. So we're going to ignore the way the statute is required because the government is taking too long, and if we allow them to continue to say you don't have a 8 U.S.C. Section 1503 claim because you're taking too long, that would be unfair to the applicants because in that scenario, they were outside of the country, and if they continue, they would lose their rights. So they decided to create an equitable remedy. Now, all of a sudden, this equitable remedy becomes the statute. That is not appropriate. Now, that's besides the fact that the reason why something is either jurisdictional or it's not is because we want to question, does equitable tolling apply or doesn't it? And if equitable tolling applies because the statute is non-jurisdictional, that's it. Now, you have a record. That record is a cold record. We could have had that opportunity in the district court and even developed it a little more. I do not know, for example, what evidence my client presented originally when he got his 2003 passport. But I already know that there was a decision that said, yes, you are a citizen of the United States. And then they changed their minds.
Well, your client had a full opportunity to present any sort of evidence that he wished to present, but the Department of State concluded that all of the evidence supported birth in Mexico and not the U.S. What in what way was your client barred from or frustrated from presenting as much evidence as he wanted to?
He did that. He tried to do that, but they never agreed with him. They never thought it was enough. They kept asking. That's why they took from somewhere around 2020 or so, almost 4 years, to make a decision back in 2024 that they were going to deny his claim. And then they don't even deny it on the right statutory reason. So for all those reasons, I think that the district court's decision was wrong and it should be denied and sent back.
Thank you, Mr. Hinojosa. Your case is under submission. Next.